Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we're covering Season 3, Episode 4, To Another Shore. Like other episodes this season, this story touches on a far corner of the DC Universe, another shore, if you will. This episode kind of sort of guest stars the Viking Prince. Joining us to tell this tale of valor is a fellow FNW All-Star, one half of the Dynamite duo over at the Batman Family Reunion. Please welcome to the Watchtower our Bat cousin, Paul Keehan. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Cindy. Thank you for having me. This is so exciting. I am very much, I never knew that the Watchtower was this big. This is really very impressive. So thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. I don't think the spread here is as good as the reunion, but maybe you can check out the commissary and ask around who's paying for the staff. We keep wondering who's paying for the bills here. You know?
The question will show me where to go, probably.
Yeah, he's been going through everybody's trash, so he knows what everybody eats. So, yeah. So before we jump into this episode, just we've never talked about animated stuff with you on the network. So where did you jump into the DCAU?
So I'm a little bit older, so I had just started working, just got out of college when Batman the Animated Series came out, and so I used to tape them on my VCR, and watch them when I came home at night. I had a very understanding wife as well. I'd just gotten married, brand new newlyweds, and then did that for a while, and then as the other shows came out, Superman and Justice League, my oldest was born in 94, and then in second 97, and another in 2002. So I used to read them, Justice League Archives. That was our bedtime reading, which was always fun. And then we would watch the shows. I would watch them with them, and bought the DVDs of them. And I finally, got the animated series Blu-ray set at some point. So it's all good. So I've enjoyed it over the years, but it wasn't like I was able to watch it live, other than those few specials that they put on like a Friday night or something.
Gotcha. Yeah, I did the record thing quite a bit too, because I was working in high school and then in college. So yeah, a lot of them I watched on VCRs. A lot of times my mom would pop a tape in and tape them for me. So, what was your favorite series of the whole Bruce Timm DCAU?
Well, I mean, it's easy to say Batman the Animated Series. I mean, Batman's my favorite character, and that was so iconic, and it was just the best version and all. It's hard for me to separate them much. I enjoyed the first Justice League, but the Justice League Unlimited, I think, was really what I really liked about that was all the guest stars and the mixing up of the rosters and all that. That kind of stuff. It was a different animal than the first Justice League. So I'd probably have to say Justice League Unlimited was my favorite of them. Best might be a different thing if you want to go back to Batman, the animated series. So it's hard for me to say. I know I'm wishy-washy, but what can I say?
There's no wrong answer, so it's okay. So do you have a favorite Justice Leaguer other than Batman?
Yeah, so if we exclude Batman and focus on this show, made a joke about the question earlier. I think he was a riot in there. But I think my favorite character to toss up between John Stewart and Wonder Woman. I think they got, they seem to get a lot of the, along with Hulk Girl, they seem to get a lot of the character development over time. It's hard to say, but I think they were my favorite, ones. If we had to choose from the non-original seven, then maybe I'd go to the question or some weird one like that, but that's how I'd answer that. I had to think about that one a bit when you sent me the list of questions. I was like, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like, how do you pick, right? But I think you're right. I think Wonder Woman got a lot of character development. She got a pretty good arc, and we actually touch on that in this episode, which is great. Yeah. And of course, we've talked about kind of John Stewart Green Lantern's kind of the breakout star of the show.
He was great.
Yeah. And he became a lot of people's Green Lantern. Lantern.
That's our son's Green Lantern.
Right. Right. I mean, that's what you would think, right? I mean,
yeah.
I agree.
So now that we've talked about the Justice League, are you a card-carrying member of the Viking Prince fan club?
Well, I actually like the Viking Prince quite a bit. I bought a number of years ago. There is an actual hardcover book of all the Joe Kubert Viking Prince collections. They're mostly written by Bob Haney and Robert Kaniger. A couple, I think, were actually written by Bill Finger. But they're all the art for all of them was Joe Kubert. And I read this book and I really enjoyed it. Now it's been 7 or 8 years since I read it, and I read a couple of them, reread it in preparation for this, but I hadn't read them in a while. And but I did remember that what's strange about this character is he had like three different continuities of his character. The first one, he was sort of lost and looking for his Viking tribe and having various adventures. The second continuity, which just sort of switched in like issue 15 of Brave and the Bold, and then he was his father was back in the picture, Rick, who was mentioned in the show, and he has these adventures. We get a secret origin for him where he meets his intended, his fiance, who then they go on adventures together, and then finally, he was brought back like 8 or 9 years later in Our Army at War to guest star in a two-part series in Our Army at War with Sergeant Rock. And he was in suspended animation in an iceberg. And that's the story where they get the inspiration for this episode, which is neat. So those are all in this book.
That's awesome. I did not know about this book. I it must have That was kind of in one of my periods where I that was like one of the few periods where I wasn't hardly buying any new
Kids were little then,
comics.
right? Kids were little
Yeah,
then.
and I was just kind of disenfranchised with DC at the time. It was right before the new 52 came in, and then that really disenfranchised me. So I think I missed that one, but now I'm gonna have to find that. I think
Well,
Cindy's already
actually,
found.
it's on Amazon right now from a third party seller for $48.87 plus $3.99 shipping.
Oh, okay.
So
Well, there you go. So it's out there.
the cover price is $40. I mean, so
Oh, so that's not bad. Not a
I
bad
probably
deal.
got it at a show, for half that, years and years ago. That's I'm always looking for deals like that when I go to shows and something unusual like that. I'm like, ooh, snap it up.
And Paul's actually really good. He's always telling me when there's like a good deal on a book, like a Tomorrow's book. And I think it was you that like mentioned the Robin book was on sale, the omnibus or something. And I got and the Who's Who omnibus, I know. I know you definitely, and I got that because it was like on like an in stock trades. It was like half
Sorry,
price.
Cindy. Sorry, Cindy.
Well, he's just a little bit spoiled.
Just a little bit. Well, you already actually covered a lot of the history of
Sorry.
no, that's great. And in fact, I should have just assigned you that homework, but I didn't want to do that to you. But I will jump off. We'll run through a little bit more history in addition to what you said.
Watchtower Files.
So John the Viking Prince, as you said, was created by Robert Kaniger and artist Joe Kubert and debuted in Brave and the Bold number 1, August, September 1955. Viking Prince was one of three initial historical action adventure series in that title, long before it became the Batman team-up title, and even before it debuted the Justice League in that title.
In 964, a ship captain named Olaf found a young Viking warrior with amnesia. The village people gave him the name John after John the Shining, a legendary Viking prince. A Viking baron named Thorwald knew that John was really the rightful heir to his throne and sought to kill him.
And as you pointed out, Paul, the continuity changed throughout the series. You got King Rick as his father. It was kind of strange because it was like written by the same people, which is like, didn't you guys have a plan here or not?
But who was that person? Bob Haney.
Bob Haney, Zany Bob Haney, who never met a continuity he couldn't smash, right?
Right, exactly.
So as much as we love him. But Joe Kubert continued on the series up through its end in Brave and the Bold number 24, as he said, with Kaniger and sometimes Bill Finger joining in. And we all know who Bill Finger is. Yeah, he's the co
Now everybody
now
knows.
everybody knows he's the co-creator of Batman. That's right.
So nearly 7 years later, Kaniger and Kubert brought their creation back in, of all places, Our Army at War, number 162, 163, in a team up with Sergeant Rock. Rock finds a still living prince frozen in a glacier. It seemed he was carried to Valhalla after a near fatal injury, but fell in love with the Valkyrie assigned to take him to the afterlife. Odin was so infuriated by the mistake, In the Forbidden Love, he banished John from Valhalla and made him impervious to any form of injury known to the 10th century. If he could die by other means, he could re-enter and marry his love.
John's Valkyrie lover cast a spell on him that put him in suspended animation until Rock found him. There he helped Easy Company fight some Nazis, which is always a good thing, and died by an explosion unknown to even Odin of the past, earning his long-denied reward.
John's next comic appearance came over 12 years later in Justice League of America, number 159-160, by Jerry Conway, Dick Dillon, and Frank McLaughlin. He was one of several heroes pulled from the past and manipulated by the Lord of Time into fighting the combined JLA-JSA team.
Yeah. Viking Prince returned to his own strip as a backup in Arrak, Son of Thunder, 8-11, once again written by Kaniger. He next appeared, once again, time-tossed during the Crisis on Infinite Earths and All-Star Squadron 54-55 in late 1986.
The Viking Prince has continued to appear in time travel stories, such as the Time Master series in 1990, the War That Time Forgot miniseries in 2008, and the Judas Coin in 2012.
One particularly memorable appearance had a time-tossed Black Canary briefly land in John's time and fall in love with him in Birds of Prey 28-30 from 2001.
The Viking Prince also briefly figures into Darwin Cook's masterpiece, The New Frontier.
He recently appeared in DC's 2020 crossover event, Endless Winter, where he had a major role. Along the way, he gained the last name of Haroldson, but it seems that any continuity blips in the character's history are easier to explain away than most comic heroes due to his legendary status. And I first encountered him in Best of DC Digest number 26, July 1982, a book that reprinted stories from Brave and the Bold's history, mostly pre-Batman team-ups. That book reprinted the story from Brave and the Bold number 18, Threat of the Ice King, which is referenced in this episode. So there was a panel, and I remember that. So, so I think we got the Viking Prince pretty well covered. Let's jump into this episode. To Another Shore was originally titled Elegy, and apparently in some places it's called that. There's some sources that still call it that, which is interesting. We've had a couple episodes like that. It originally aired September 24th, 2005, same date as the last episode. So again, they're airing two episodes back to back. Written by Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Dan Ribba, with music by Christopher Carter. In the cast, we had Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, Carl Lumley as John Jones, Ken Schreiner as Green Arrow, Scott Patterson as Agent Faraday, Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor, Powers Booth as Grodd, Michael Beach as Devil Ray and Mr. Terrific, Jennifer Hale as Giganta and Killer Frost, and Lex Lang as Heatwave.
Somewhere, apparently in the Swiss Alps, an avalanche caused by global warming reveals a preserved Viking ship hidden in the ice. Sometime later, Wonder Woman prepares to attend a conference on global warming at the site of the ship's discovery. She and Green Arrow, concerned about Jean's increasing solitude, encourage him to attend with her, but he refuses, citing he's the only one who can coordinate the League's taxed resources.
Meanwhile, in a dismal swamp lies the headquarters of the Legion of Doom. Grodd and Luthor discuss how Lex has been busy augmenting the powers and weapons of the members, including Devil Ray. Grodd has a mission for the modern pirate and tells his team the legend of the Viking Prince. After many epic adventures, Prince John dared to fall in love with a Valkyrie and was banned from Valhalla and his true love by Odin. John pleaded to him, and Odin granted him a chance to be reunited with his love in the afterlife, but cursed him with invulnerability from wood, fire, earth, and water. John threw himself into battle after battle, seeking heroic death, but unable to find a way back to his love, he sailed away from man's world and into legend.
Grodd believes the recently discovered Viking ship to be Prince John's and wants Devil Ray and his team to steal his corpse so that Luthor can reverse engineer the secret of his invulnerability. This would make them unstoppable, even against the Justice League. Meanwhile, at the conference, Diana is frustrated by representatives refusing to believe in the threat of global warming, despite the evidence of the unearthed Viking ship below them. After subtly threatening action from Themyscira if the rest of the world doesn't acknowledge the problem, Diana walks outside, where agent and League liaison King Faraday warns her to tone things down in a semi-joking manner. Suddenly, the mountain begins to suffer a quake, and Diana changes into Wonder Woman to investigate.
She finds Heatwave melting the glacier with a flamethrower. Devil Ray, Killer Frost, and Giganta run interference between Wonder Woman and Faraday and his agents. But Devil Ray manages to hit Diana with a poison stinger. Luckily, Faraday and his agents fly in on jetpacks and take up the fight. He removes the stinger, but Diana is still suffering from the poison and calls Jean for backup. He's reluctant to go himself, but Diana insists she needs him. He does indeed arrive with Green Arrow in tow, and they begin to turn the tide. But the villains remain, refusing to retreat. Jean probes Gigana's mind to find out what is so important about the ship and gets flashes of Grodd's tale of the Viking Prince and then a bolt of immense pain, which also strikes Gigana, knocking her unconscious.
Devil Ray's submarine emerges from below and fires tow lines into the melted glacier, taking the ship with him, destabilizing the mountain and endangering everyone at the conference above. Green Arrow makes it into the sub before it dives, and Wonder Woman follows as the Viking ship goes below with it. She fights off Devil Ray, eventually cracking his suit and forcing him to surface. Jean forces Killer Frost to use her powers to stop the resulting avalanche and save the conference attendees. Green Arrow disengages the sub's tow lines, but is briefly captured by Devil Ray's men. Faraday signals the sub that they are surrounded by U.S. submarines and are very willing to fire upon them, so they surrender.
Having taken the antitoxin she found in Devil Ray's belt, Diana joins Jean, Green Arrow, and Faraday in comparing notes in the aftermath. Jean fills them in on the villain's intended plans for the Viking Prince. Having heard of his legend even on Themyscira, Diana pledges to take care of a proper burial for him. They converse on the strange alliance of villains and the trend of their enemies being lobotomized when questioned. Jean tells them they'll have to solve that mystery without him. The Viking Prince's plight has struck close to home as Jean, who as a Martian has an even longer lifespan, realizes if he doesn't learn to connect with humanity, he'll live out his time alone.
The episode ends as Diana reads an excerpt from The Rime of the Ancient Mariner with a dual montage of the Leaguers launching the Viking Prince's ship out into space and into the sun, and Jean saying goodbye to the team. He beams down and assumes human form as he mingles in on the crowded streets.
This is one of the shortest cold, pardon the pun, opens in the series history. We get an avalanche caused by global warming and a Viking ship is revealed to be hidden in the glacier. Cut to credits. So what did you guys think of this opening with no Leaguer or villain in sight, Paul?
Well, I thought it was funny how precarious the resort on top of the glacier was.
Yeah.
And that the Viking ship just happened to be under that very glacier.
Yeah,
but other than that, I mean, it's a cool sequence, and it's neat to see the reactions of the people when they uncover, you know, when the nose of the ship is sticking out of the ice. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting because it, you know, it said that he was the original version of the story. He's found by sailors, and here he's found by sailors again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of neat. But yeah, you're right. It's like ski resorts and Bond villain headquarters on tops of these icy mountains. I don't think it's a good idea.
I don't know why they do that.
Yeah.
when a guy with a heat gun could crash your resort to the ground, I don't know.
Yeah. So we cut to the watchtower, and Princess Diana, Wonder Woman, is not in her usual uniform. What do you think of her outfit, Cindy?
I mean, she's going to a conference. She's not going to wear her Star Spangled panties. Come on.
What do you think about Green Arrow whistling at her?
It's one of those things. I honestly didn't take that. He was not being a lech. He was just like, dang, girl, you look good. He's like pumping her up, you know?
Yeah, I didn't take it that
way. I didn't take it that way. No. I mean, I have friends that, you know, like, I have several friends, and I'm like, oh, girl, you are slaying today, you know? It's just you pump up your fellow females. And I mean, I know that, you know, this is obviously him, but he is not doing it as being a lech. Yeah. I don't take it that way.
What about you, Paul?
Yeah, no, I think he's trying to be supportive in his goofy way, I guess. But I think it's good. And she looks great. It looks very professional, mm-hmm. Ready to go to the conference.
Yep. She says she's attending the global warming conference to represent Themyscira, following her and Hippolyta mending fences. And I like Ollie's way to go, Diana. Save the planet. That's our tree hugging hippie Ollie from from the comics. So that's nice. He says she'll make a great diplomat, but leave your sword.
Hey, you know, when she went to that in Wonder Woman, she had it
in the back
gown.
Of her dress. Yeah.
That's right.
I thought of that too, Cindy. That's funny.
That's right. Oddly enough, Wonder Woman never really carries a sword much here.
No.
This is before the sword became, you know, part of her usual, you know, I think when they did the
part of her accoutrement.
Yeah, accoutrement. When they did the Fatal Five sequel movie, she carried the sword all the time on that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, yeah. We see other Leaguers in the background on monitors like Dr. Fate, Black Canary, Red Tornado, fighting Volcana from Superman the Animated Series, and Wildcat. And then Diana tries to convince Jean to go, but he says he can't leave the Watchtower, and she points out that Mr. Miracle, she points out that Mr. Terrific is there to handle it, and there's a nice gag about him doing the New York Times crossword while he's on duty, and Ollie says he does it in ink. So
yeah, that was cute. That was cute, yeah.
So we were just behind the curtain, guys. We were just talking to, we did a Batman Friend reunion, me, Paul, and Sean. And Sean was talking about doing crosswords, so I wonder if he does New York Times crossword in ink. What do you think? Do you know, Paul?
I don't think Sean does it in ink. I do them, but I do them on my phone, so I can always erase it and check for what's right.
Oh, okay. There you go.
But yeah, doing it in ink, forget it. That's why he's the world's third smartest guy, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think it's the first time we've heard Mr. Terrific speak, and Michael Beach provides both his voice and that of Devil Ray, who we'll meet in a bit. Spoiler warning, but Mr. Terrific does end up taking over Jean's post during his leave of absence, which we'll get to. So he does fill in for Jean as the coordinator on the Watchtower, which makes perfect sense. Because, as you said, he's the third smartest man. Who's the other two? Did they ever say? I don't know.
Honestly, the other two, it's probably one of them is Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Could be, yeah.
You know,
Reed Richards, maybe.
yeah, go. So, what do you guys think about Jean hiding on the Watchtower from humanity, as Diana gently accuses him of, Paul?
I had forgotten that, to be honest with you, and didn't really, you know, I didn't go back and rewatch other episodes. Listen to the show, but I haven't really gone back and watched any recently. So, I'm gonna have to do that, to see if there's more hints about that prior to now. I mean, maybe you guys can tell me, but I thought that was interesting. It gives him a storyline, right? If he's going to, you know, spoiler to the end, he's going to walk around humanity for a while in his various human guises, right? And that's interesting. I like that. But it was a little bit of a surprise to me, coming in somewhat cold.
Yeah. What about you, Cindy?
I mean, it's one of those cases I can see where someone like him would be overwhelmed. And the different things that they've mentioned about how, you know, how can people be this cruel to each other? And, you know, so
we've seen him kind of overwhelmed by humanity before. And he hasn't, I think really the only time I've seen him since JLU started leave the Watchtower was the big finale last season that I can think of off the top of my head. So he really has been stuck
I wasn't
on
so far.
Yeah, they're not.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine he's overstimulated, right? He's got the telepathy, and he can, you know, sort of like Superman having to shut out everybody in the world's talking, right? So,
I think it makes sense. And like you said, it's a good development for him, it's a good art for him. So, we then cut to Bizarro and Star Sapphire flying through the Hall of Doom for a Legion meeting. Thoughts on this version of the Secret Society / Legion of Doom, Paul?
I love it. I love all the villain cameos. I think it's, you know, it's cool. You know, I love the Super Friends. I was, again, a little older, so I watched a lot of I didn't watch as many of the later ones where they had the Legion of Doom until much later. Right. And so, so I don't have quite the same emotional attachment to the Legion of Doom as a number of our friends do, but I like it. It's fun. It's cool.
Yeah. It's, and I mean, you know, it's according to who you're listening to, whether you should call it Secret Society or Legion of Doom, but they intended it to be the Legion of Doom. So that's why we call it on here. So, so we also see the key again, Heat Wave, Killer Frost, Gigantic.
The key. I love it.
Giganta, Devil Ray, as Lex and Grodd talk about how Lex has been boosting powers of the roster, including the Atomic Skull, seen in a hologram, and their version of the Atomic Skull is very, you know, it's a version based from the comics of that time, but he pretty much looks like Ghost Rider, you know, from the neck, from the floating head up anyway, you know, so. But who the heck is Devil Ray, you
ask?
Well,
that was my question for you. I'm like, why couldn't they just have used Black Manta? He's got all the stuff. He's got the submarine. He's got the eyes. I'm like, I'm like, who is Devil? I'm like, Devil Ray? I'm like, was he in this show before? So you're gonna have to tell me, because I don't know who the heck Devil Ray is.
Okay, well, I'll fill you in. He is basically Black Manta. The only thing they've changed his name, as you said. Before WB did stupid things like shelve movies for tax purposes, they did less stupid things, still stupid, but less stupid, like place embargoes on characters from one media to another. Mm-hmm. Aquaman was in development as a live-action spinoff to be called Mercy Reef, and WB forbade Tim and crew from using any Aquaman-related characters moving forward, like Aquaman himself and Black Manta, who they were planning on using this season.
Sure.
Yep. So that's the one with, that's the Mercy Reef pilot with Justin Hartley, who they went on to play Green Arrow.
Yep. Right. I'll be darned. I did not know that.
We also lost almost every Batman character to the Batman animated series. That's why the Joker's not on here anymore, or any of the Bat villains. Just they got to keep Batman, and that was pretty much it. So, but yeah, Dwayne McDuffie and Bruce Timm and crew came up with their own version and just called him Devil Ray. Amazingly, though, he's voiced by Michael Beach, who played Black Manta's father in the live-action Aquaman movie. So he kind of sort of got to play Black Manta later, you know.
That's
so
cool.
That is really cool. Yeah, I bet you he was like, I've already done this, you know. It's just like, in fact, Aquaman was originally the focus of this story, but it was changed to Wonder Woman when the embargo came down. Diana says Atlantis withdrew from the World Council when other countries refused to believe in the danger of global warming. So, it does make sense why he's not in it, but apparently the subplot with Jean came about when Diana took center stage, since they have been shown to be close in the past. And Dwayne McDuffie apparently said, or Bruce Timm said, Dwayne McDuffie would have never thought of it if they'd used Aquaman.
Right.
But by using Wonder Woman, then they could come up with this cool subplot, this nice subplot for Jean. So it actually probably works better with Diana. And it also makes sense that, Diana's in the past has been an ambassador to Man's World. So it kind of makes sense in a way.
See, this is why I love listening to you guys. This is great stuff.
Well, thank you. So how do you guys think this episode would have been different with Aquaman? I mean, we saw how he treated the UN in his first appearance. You know, he basically stormed in and like, cut it out or I'm going to attack you. So he's even less of a diplomat than we see Diana being. So what do you think, Paul?
Well, the scenes at the beginning, I find it hard to believe he would like dress up in a suit the way she does.
Yeah.
So they would have been a little nervous about him being around. I guess a lot of the underwater scenes make sense, right? I don't know. I think I prefer it with Wonder Woman in it, because like we talked about before, she's got a good storyline, but mm-hmm. I'd have to think about that one. That's really interesting.
I know you'd rather have Wonder Woman, Sydney, but
uh-huh.
Yeah. But I like their take. Their version of the hook-handed Aquaman is my favorite version of the hook-handed Aquaman. So, so I'm sorry we didn't get more of him, because I did like him, but I'm glad Diana's on here. Mm-hmm. So at the Legion of the Hall of Doom headquarters, this is where Grodd tells the tale of the Viking Prince. And I remember watching this live being gobsmacked that they dug this deep in DC history. I mean, wow, you know?
Yeah, really. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Because all those appearances, those sort of post-crisis appearances you've talked about all happened after this. So before this, there wasn't a whole lot of Viking Prince.
No, no, that's right. Yeah, he didn't. He was just kind of forgotten in a lot of ways, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that this one thing that people always remember about this episode is the way they illustrate the story that that Grodd tells of the Viking Prince. And this artwork is just gorgeous. It's these semi-animated still images. In some ways, it's like a really beautiful version of the old Marvel superheroes cartoons. With just images like floating in and out of, but it's really well done. And Paul, you got some background info on where some of these images came from, don't you?
Yeah. So I went and looked, because I'm like, a couple of them really look familiar to me. And I pulled out that book I was telling you about. And so at least for the first three, I know exactly where they came from. The first one where the Viking prince is sort of being introduced and he just has his sword and his shield and he's coming toward you. That comes from the splash page of our Army at War number 162. What's interesting about this one and all three of the ones that I found, they were all reversed. They're all flipped and they're all definitely cleaned up a bit. You know, whether they were redrawn or traced or whatever, I don't know how those things work, but I thought that was neat. The second one is a sort of a sword fight with a bald guy. That comes from Brave and the Bold number 16, page 4 of the Viking Prince story. And then the third one, he's in the snow with a blue tunic, and the girl in red is he's defending the girl in red at the bottom of the page, the Ice King. You mentioned that one. That one came from Brave and the Bold number 18, the one you mentioned.
Yeah, that's the one that was reprinted.
Well, I didn't look up the other ones, but my guess is they all came from various stories. Like why redo something when you can use? And it looks like Joe Kubert painted them. I mean, they're really beautiful. I mean, that was just a super cool part of the episode for me.
Yeah, me too. I've always wondered, you know, was that lifted art, you know, that they just touched up? But I some sources I've seen said that Bruce Timm recreated them. I don't know if he may have not recreated them like completely. He may have like digitally recreated them, you know, and then touched them up. Right. But apparently his hand was involved. And if he did redraw parts of it, I can also believe it because he's an incredible mimic, in addition to being, you know, awesome on his own. But either way, it looks like pure Joe Kubert. And it's really looks great up on your big giant TV screen nowadays. So
really neat.
It's beautiful. I love that last close up of his face. He looks so haunted. You know, just when it talks about how he's, you know, he can't die and he's so desperate to die in battle and he just like leaves the humanity behind. It's just the look on his face is just like, just, oh man, it really tells the story. And having Powers Booth, even though it's Gorilla Grodd, having Powers Booth, somebody with such a great voice as him, tell the story just makes it's just epic. You forget you're listening to the evil monkey.
I thought it was weird that Grodd got to tell the story, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, thank God it's not the
You would think it would Luthor would be telling that story, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Right. Well, Clancy Brown been good too, but at least
I wish it was the ultra humanite. Gather round, children.
That's right. Our other favorite simian on this show. At least it wasn't the old, you know, the old Super Friends Gorilla Grodd who had that slurpy sound and everything. He said, "The Viking prince must, he was found, you know, just, you know, all that, you know, I'll see you in the future," or whatever, you know, all that stuff. And like you said, this is very close to the comics. Paul, I mean, just, I mean, they jumped off of that, they've jumped off of that Sergeant Rock story, and they basically put the League in place. Now, it doesn't quite work out the same way, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, but we don't get a true team up. That would have been cool.
Yeah, that's the part that, you know, I'll wait till the end to talk about the end. So
okay, we'll wait for that. So Grodd knows that it's John's ship. He recognizes the standard of King Rick on the mast. So they are going with that continuity, as we said, too. So, and of course, he wants them to steal his corpse so Luthor can reverse engineer his invulnerability. And he teases what his ultimate goal is, but Killer Frost points out, "You've never told us what your ultimate goal is." And he's like, well, patience, you know, it's worth waiting for. So we'll actually find out what this is. And it's really kind of a doozy what this is and how they react to it when they find out what it is. So I don't want to spoil it in case we've got some people that are watching as we go along, sometimes for the first time. So,
right.
So I'm going to get too heavy in this episode. We're having fun, but this episode is almost 20 years old and obviously still relevant with climate change and the people in power that refuse to believe it or want to acknowledge it, not doing anything about it, or, well, we can't do that. That's too drastic. So we'll move on from that. But I think we can all agree this is, you know, we're just nodding our heads.
Still topical.
Still very
unfortunately. Topical. Unfortunately.
Yeah, very, very much so. Yeah. And then Diana tells them her mother is less likely to withdraw from the council than to move forward with a military solution. Oh, boy.
Love it.
Yeah. This might not be so good for the Justice League trying to win back the trust of the governments, the world governments, after the whole space gun fiasco.
Hey, she warned you. She wasn't a diplomat. She warned you.
She did. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
Well, it makes me think of in the Wonder Woman movie when she is in where all of these generals are like, well, we'll send these troops here and we'll send these troops here. And she's like, oh, you're going to the front. And they're like, no, we're doing this. Well, we actually lead our people. That way we have skin in the game.
Right.
And that's what makes me think of this. Her mother's hey, I want to solve this. This affects me. I'm going to be on that field.
Yeah. That's a good call, Baxton.
Yeah, that is. Nice. Really nice. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's what a lot of the problems are going on here as far as internationally and everything else. Things are being, and this is me thinking about it, the president in the Ukraine, he's on the field with his troops.
Yeah.
So he knows what's going on. Yeah. So he is there, and that's where my support is.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, yeah, well, we weren't going to get heavy, but we did. So,
sorry, it's always my fault. This is me thinking politics. Apologize.
So moving back to the story at hand, Diana bumps into Agent King Faraday, who we've met before. And she says she's not much of a diplomat. And I love what he says. He says, don't sell yourself short, lady. You're an international incident waiting to happen.
Yep.
Good line.
That is. Yeah. I love the way Scott Patterson delivers it, too. It's just really so great.
Can I ask you a question about King Faraday? He sounds more like Sergeant Fury, you know, talking about the gold bricking yahoos and all that. I thought
Christopher said the same thing.
Oh, that's too funny. That's too funny.
Yeah. I think he's like a surrogate Nick Fury and a little bit
Flash.
Of Steve Trevor a little bit too, because him and Wonder Woman seem to have kind of a little thing going on here too. Yeah. So yeah. So I think which we met Steve Trevor back in, but he was in the past, you know, he was in World War II when they went back in the past, Steve Trevor was. So he's an old man in the present. But he's definitely, they've got jetpacks, and he's got one guy that's got one of his men's has a big handlebar mustache.
Yes, I saw that. I'm like, this looks like Sergeant Fury. That's so funny.
Yeah, he just needs an eye patch. Yeah. And then he tells her, if she raises her voice at the VP again, my men are under orders to shoot you. And I love her reaction. What she does,
she's just like, you know, here's my bracelet, bring it.
And then she like clinks it, like clink, like points to it and kind of clink.
Yeah, that doesn't scare her too much. I love that.
Then we get the mountain quake, and what happens next, Cindy? What she did?
We have the reveal where she turns into her costume, which is awesome. My favorite Wonder Woman part on the whole gosh darn series.
Wow, she didn't do that in other episodes, does she?
Or no. That's it.
I didn't remember that either, and I figured you'd be the one to ask, because I'm like, I thought, oh, that's really cool. I'm like, but I didn't remember her doing that on other. It wasn't a thing in my head. Okay.
No.
This is the one time she does the Linda Carter spin. And we could call it the Linda Carter spin because Linda Carter herself came up with it.
Yes.
It's her idea to spin and change.
That's cool.
Diana to Wonder Woman. So that's a definite nod to her, which I think is really cool. And they did it on the Brave and the Bold too. Mm-hmm. But it was, and they were able to use the music there. That's the only thing. But it's you can still hear the ding 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 as she does it, you know. As you pointed out, Paul, we see Heatwave in action using a flamethrower.
That's good use of him, I thought, you know.
Yeah.
That he was deployed properly by Grodd.
That's right. Yeah. He was. You know, they didn't like, you know, and it made sense too, because it wasn't like Firefly or somebody. I mean, it could have been Firefly, but using Heatwave was nice, because that way you went deeper into the bench and got some Flash villains in there. So
yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Devil Ray shoots Faraday's men with little trident like barbed stingers, which we're going to see a lot more of. And that looks like it really hurts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's very similar to when you actually have a stun gun. Oh. Where the barbs go into your skin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Because it's not just one barb. It's like two or three, I think.
Yeah, you've been stunned lately or something?
I was going to say, where are you hanging out, Cindy?
Yeah. I like Killer Frost's personality. And
notice I didn't answer, but
yeah, no, you didn't.
I noticed.
Yeah, I like Killer Frost's personality and Jennifer Hale's performance here, but I've always thought her design was a little too similar to Livewire.
Oh, definitely.
From Superman the Animated Series.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Pale white skin and a blue bodysuit, you know, with the cleavage, you know, so it's Livewire. It's just like... I do like her line to Wonder Woman when she deflects her ice.
I know, cheater, you're cheating. I'm like, you're a bad guy.
Yeah, that was funny.
Heatwave, I forgot, Heatwave does actually speak like I think one line when the agent, Faraday's agent is like, if you pull that ship out, the whole mountain's going to collapse. And he's like, so? You know, it's like he's got like one word line, but... He's voiced by Lex Lang, who should be a Superman character. I mean, with a name like Lex Lang, I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah, really.
He voiced Dick Grayson as Batman 2 on Batman the Brave and the Bold and Doctor Doom on Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes, and he does a lot of voiceover work. So most of these other guys, they've all played these parts before, like Jennifer Hale and played Giganta multiple times and stuff, so... Devil Ray is very condescending after he shoots Diana with the stinger. He calls her sweetheart and mansplains to her. I can't imagine you care for him, do you, Cindy?
He gets her later.
Yeah, she gets him later. Yeah, yeah, she does. Yeah.
And I'm like,
that thing did look like it hurt. I mean, to hurt her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Stick in her skin. I'm like, ouch.
Look at her. Yeah. I forget that Wonder Woman isn't invulnerable because we see her deflect so much stuff with her bracelets.
Mm-hmm.
When she doesn't, it's like, oh, yeah, she can get hurt. You know, I mean, yeah. I guess it's according to what version.
I was going to say, it's a little inconsistent over the years. But, it's better when that's the case because a little more skill involved with the bracelets and stuff. I think that's cool.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. And Faraday has to pull the barb stinger out. And I like, he says, you want a bullet to bite? There are plenty laying around.
Yeah.
He's got some great lines in this episode.
Yeah.
So she calls up DeJean and he is really locked into his hermit mode here, isn't he? I mean, I don't think Diana asked for him here to get him out of the house at this point. I think it's a nice benefit, but she just really, we need you and your power level here. I mean, that's
Green Arrow is not going to cut it by himself.
Right.
First logic, last point of the thing. Why didn't she just say, get your butt down here. I need you. The end. And hang up.
Yeah.
Not, oh, I'm in the middle of a battlefield. Let me explain it to you, honey.
Yeah. No. Well, she did say, I need you. I mean, you know.
And she was on the phone too long.
Oh, okay.
No. I mean, the same thing. Like, if I call you and I'm like, I need you here now, I'm going to hang up the phone and deal with what I got to deal with. I'm not going to say, oh, honey, I need you to come here. Da, 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 da. No.
Well, okay. This time I think Ollie's line is sexist, but when he shows up and blasts Giganta's fingers, he says, what's the matter, honey? Break a nail?
Yeah. But by the same token, Giganta is girly.
Yeah.
So, you know.
She is very girly. On
I had forgotten how her voice was so girly relative to the size of her boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
That made me laugh. I actually have a note on that. That made me laugh because I assume that's, you know, on purpose, right? You know, boom, boom, boom. I just think that's funny.
It's even funnier because they did reveal that Giganta on here is an involved ape. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did reveal that because it's like, who was it that was like kind of into her? I can't remember who it was in the other Secret Society episode. I can't remember what other villain it was. But then they were kind of like, when Rod mentioned she was an evolved gorilla, he was kind of like, oh, okay, whatever. Just kind of, you know, so it's been a while since I watched that one, so I don't know. But
now,
speciesist.
Yeah, right.
Now, Killer Frost, she freezes an agent of Faraday's, and she's like, ooh, I like him. I'm going to keep him. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got a good showing here.
Yeah.
You know? I think this is her first time she's really, she's appeared in the background. It's the first time she's, like, had a spotlight, you know, so. She also freezes Green Arrow in a block of ice, but then you see a buzzsaw.
Love it.
You love that bit? Yeah.
Love the buzzsaw arrow. Loved it. I wonder how he shot it being frozen in ice, but I'll let that go because buzzsaw arrow, too cool to question.
Oh, yeah.
I thought my memory had him like some kind of thermal arrow got him out, but he didn't, you know, and I love his line. And Black Canary said a buzzsaw arrow was self-indulgent. So I like the they make the comment that they're, that's their... obviously still an item. So what do you think about this version of Green Arrow, Paul?
Not my favorite, ironically. I mean, I guess it's hard because you watch so many years of a different kind of Green Arrow in live action and you see a different, you know, sort of more serious guy. And then you see him in the Brave and the Bold. I liked him there. He's I know he's supposed to be brash, but he's his lines sound a little bit too much like Spider-Man to me. Like I think of him as brash, but I don't always think of him as a wiseacre, you know. And that's kind of the way they're writing him. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just making that up because it's been a while. Like I said, I didn't rewatch. This has inspired me. I'm like, I got to go watch the whole thing now and watch along instead of just listening to a podcast. So I maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's my initial gut on Green Arrow. I don't know what you think.
No, I mean, I can see that. I mean, we really like him. Me and Cindy have talked about, you know, we kind of like the, it's kind of, he's kind of the Bronze Age version without being so much of a self-righteous hothead.
Right.
You know, he kind of tones it down a little bit. He's not.
He's more humorous than the Bronze Age Green Arrow was. I guess maybe that's what I'm comparing him to. That's why I grew up with all the 70s and 80s comics. And that's where I'm coming from. He just didn't. Like I said, to me, the wisecracking is you know, nobody tops Spider-Man for doing wisecracking. So why do it? So anyway, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So Diana and Jean pause and wonder about why they are so insistent on getting this ship. I mean, they're not even trying to leave, retreat. They have opportunities to, and they don't. But you know, while they're doing it, they're like looking over at Heat Wave melting the glacier, and I'm thinking, why don't you stop Heat Wave? Like, throw your tiara at him and knock him out, or, you know, throw your lasso on him and pull him away, or Jean turn into something and go under the ground and come up underneath, face through the ground and come up underneath him and stop him or something.
That's good. It's a good move.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, I know why they're doing it, because he's going to do what he does next, which is probe Gigana's mind and figure out what they're doing. And he gets enough of the Viking Prince legend. But he also gets feedback from her brain getting fried. So,
Right.
So this is, we talked about this on the previous episode, Paul, where Metallo gets lobotomized.
Right.
By
Grodd, right? I mean, Grodd's doing all this.
Right. Grodd's got him. He's doing it. He's got him. He's either got some fail safe put in their head or he's doing it, you know, remotely watching them. But I think
he's doing it over Zoom, probably.
Right. Yeah. It's right. As you pointed out, of course, Devil Ray has a submarine because he's Black Manta. And of course, he's got a submarine or a mana ship or something, right? So he fires some grappling hooks into the ship. And Faraday is, as we said, kind of acting as a replacement for Steve Trevor, too, because as the ground crumbles underneath him, the flying heroes pick up the non-flying ones. And he says, you're a sight for sore eyes. Not to say that ain't always the case. So
he's
working it. Batman better watch out now. So we got a nice cut to them all panicking as the mountain's starting to crumble with all the diplomats up top, all the from the different countries. So that's a huge problem, obviously. And as you said, Paul, really not a great idea to put a resort in. Definitely not a good place to put, you know, that's a good point. You think about it. Now, I know that one guy who's also voiced by Clancy Brown, some kind of diplomat, says, oh, it was very clever of our sponsor to have this, you know, conference here, a great bit of PR where this, you know, global warming has caused this apparent global warming has caused this Viking ship, but also it's unstable.
I guess when they built it, maybe the glacier was more stable. Maybe another point for climate change there.
Yeah, well, but I mean, since they knew it was destabilized by the Viking ship being exposed, Yet they had a conference where the vice president of the United States and other
right.
world leaders.
And all kinds of other world leaders, right?
So it's like, not the safest thing in the world, but yeah.
And politicians are smart. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. then a scene that I love this, but based on what you said, Paul, you might not like it, but I love this scene. It's about as meta as the show gets. Green Arrow fires his arrow line onto Devil Ray's sub, and as he zip lines down on his bow, he sings along to his own theme music. So what did you think of that?
I admit it was funny. It was definitely funny, but that, you know, but you know, is it, it's funny. Is it Green Arrow? You know, that depends on your mileage may differ, I guess. Is
yeah, I mean, if it's not Steve Amell and it's not Mike Grell, that's for sure. Or later Mike
right,
Grell.
Right,
Longbow
right.
Hunter Mike Grell. Yeah,
it's not Longbow Hunter Green Arrow, and it's not Steve, well, which are basically the same. It's a great scene. It's terrific. It's funny. No question about it.
What about you, Cindy? I know you.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
it makes me grin every time.
Yeah. Diana is punching the iceberg. You know, she goes in the water, punches the iceberg, which is cool, while Green Arrow makes his way through the ship.
I thought Diana was very tough under the water.
Yes.
And that's cold. That water's cold, right? I mean, that's like, you know, Arctic water. It's got to be, you know, close to freezing, right? That's she's tough. Especially with the poison going through her, and you know, so.
It's
WW tough underwater, very cold. That was one of my notes here.
Oh, cool, yeah, yeah, she definitely is. This is a good, I mean, it shows that she's just not going to give up, even though, as Faraday pointed out, she's got like tons of poison coursing through her veins. And they show that one guy get hit and he just drops, so he might be dead. I don't know, you know, they can't do too much of that, but they never show him again, so I don't know. Jean grabs Killer Frost, who is trying to escape, and I like her line, "Hey, watch the hands," based on what she's wearing.
I thought that was hysterical. That was great.
Yeah. Devil Ray is a real scumbag. He gloats about Diana holding her breath as he attacks her, and then he digs his fingers into that wound.
I'm like, ooh, ouch. Yeah, he's a bad dude, I thought.
Yeah, he comes across as a real, like, he's just a real bad, evil person that just comes across.
No redeeming qualities.
Yeah, he's just bad. He's evil.
But then she gets pissed.
Yeah, and she gets a hold of him. What do you think about what she did, Cindy?
I mean, she gets a hold of him, she's like, "Shaw!" and then rips off gets his helmet off of him.
Yeah. Well, cracks it. Yeah, she basically uses her strength to, like, crack his suit.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh!" You know, of course, then he's... You know, he's SOL because now he can't hold his breath.
Yeah,
you know?
Smart ass.
It's kind of brutal, but she's obviously had enough of his crap.
Uh-huh.
So,
yep.
Yeah, really cool. Yeah. It kind of reminded me a little bit of in the first Aquaman movie, how when they're fighting and Aquaman just like, he gets up, like when he's fighting Black Manta, he ends up getting like knocked around so bad and it goes down the side of that mountain. It kind of reminded me of that a little bit. So, it's kind of cool. So what did you think about Jean making Killer Frost stop the avalanche, Paul?
I love that. I thought that was great. He one of the things I do like the portrayal of John Jones on the animated series, because one of the things that I like about him quite a bit is he has a belief in humanity. And I guess here he's got to discover that. But he's like, you know, hey, you're going to do the right thing. I'm going to sort of stand here and make you do the right thing, but you're going to do the right thing. And I don't know. I really dug that. I thought that was great.
Well, the thing is, Killer Frost knew he was not bluffing. She's like, okay, I'm going to die here if I don't do this.
Yeah. Right. No, he'd be fine. He could just go intangible. Right.
Right.
But I don't know. I really liked it.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was a great moment for him too. And it was a way for him to use his power, like his influence and his wisdom as a power in a lot
of
ways.
Right, right.
Which I really liked. Yeah, I thought that was I thought that was a nice touch. I did like the fact that she said she'll give him frostbite in places he didn't even know he had places.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got great lines. She's good.
Yeah. So Green Arrow's made his way through the ship, and there's some fun stuff there. I meant to look up those guys. Manta's, sorry, I called it Manta, sorry. Devil Ray's men look like, they look familiar, like they're henchmen from something else. I'm thinking they might be henchmen from Johnny Quest. I meant to look that up.
Okay. That would be a deep cut.
Yeah. So if you guys, anybody knows for sure, and I'll look afterwards, but I don't want to do it right now. We're recording, but I'm thinking they might be some like, you know, Alex Toth designed wow. Johnny Quest or Doug Wadley maybe, you know, cause he, you know, wow. but they both worked on Johnny Quest, but
that would be a deep cut.
Yeah. But it would make sense for Bruce Timm to do it, you know? So yeah, it, because with the X pattern across and the visors they've got on, they look very much like utility villain henchmen, you know, from something like that, you know, so I like that. But Green Arrow's made his way through the ship, and I like it. He actually releases the cables
yes.
before Diana, she's pulling yeah. on it. Yeah. So, but
yeah, I thought that was neat. Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody gets something important to do. You know, John stops the avalanche with Killer Frost. Diana defeats Devil Ray. And, you know, she does that part and keeps him off of it. And then Ollie, like, you know, actually releases the mm-hmm. ship. So not the Kraken, but he releases.
Well,
the
and then you have Faraday.
Yeah.
He is, you know, he has all of them. He's like, I really enjoy firing Trident missiles at tiny subs.
That's great. It's great. Yeah. And Green Arrow's just like, puts his hand out, and the guy, like, fine. He hands over his gun.
Yep. Yeah.
Because they're surrounded by like three nuclear, U.S. nuclear submarines.
So yeah, it's that like, was cool. That was funny.
Yeah. That's nice.
Who
yeah.
just happened to be in the area?
Well, the vice president's there, though.
Yeah.
I can buy it. I can buy it.
Yeah.
Buy
yeah. It. Yeah. Unfortunately, this is Faraday's last appearance on the series, mm-hmm. which is a bummer because I like him. So, dagnabbit. But we're winding down, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, the afterwards, the heroes compare notes, and John explains what he learned before Gigana's mind was shut down. Diana says the legend of the Viking prince is even known on Themyscira, which, like, that's pretty impressive, you know.
Yeah.
They got this whole... We don't like men's world thing, and they still know about him. So
they're warriors. They like the warrior business stuff. You know,
that's true. That's true.
You could see how that would be a good story there.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the whole, like, you know, he can't set foot on it. That'd been a good place for him to land, right? Because he could have just lived out his days with immortal Amazons. Yeah, not a bad way.
Sounds like a good life for me.
That's right. Yeah. of course, Diana vows to give him a proper traditional burial because they're like, his body cannot stay here because they'll just keep coming back, whoever these guys are working for, working with. So.
Oh, there's so many things. I'm trying to wait till the end. I don't know if this is right. All right.
Well, whenever. But the heroes compare notes on the strange combinations of villains and the fact that they had two enemies get mind zapped when questioned. So I like, you know, we're building this plot line, but Jean tells them they'll have to solve that mystery without him. So what did y'all think of this decision, Paul, for him to walk away and walk about with man?
Well, you know, it's kind of extreme, right? I mean, he could have just, you know, taken a few hours here and there and done it, but it's, you know, I like him, you know, going out and exploring humanity. It makes sense. He's a shapeshifter. He can take any form he wants, although he takes the traditional John Jones form there, obviously. But I like it. I don't remember what happens next. I'm looking forward to figuring it out.
Yeah, it pays off. I will say that, which is good. Yeah. We brought this up before, but now Jean has been played by Black actors, mostly as in voice and in live action. Now, when he turns into a white guy, I'm all like, I have to remind myself I've gotten so used to it, you know. I'm like, what? Yeah. What? What? Yeah, I was like,
yeah,
it's kind of funny, but of course, he can change it anybody wants to, but yeah, right. John Jones is like the classic Detective Comics,
yep,
John Jones detective look, so with the trench coat and everything. So, what do you think about it, Cindy?
Okay. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Okay. So here's the one of the problems that I have with this. You have an archaeology site where this ship has been in there. Where are the scientists? You have these guys with guns run up to defend against these villains. Where are the scientists? This is a huge, major find. where are the scientists to look at this ship?
Mm.
Where are they at?
Where's Indiana Jones?
Maybe, so I'm working my head cannon here. Maybe they had to leave temporarily while all the world leaders were there for the summit.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know. And then
no prize.
Yeah. Okay. So are we to the funeral part yet?
Not yet. Not quite yet.
Okay. Then there's my next thing.
Okay. 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 Yep.
What
did you think about Jean? What did you think about Jean and his decision to?
Sometimes you just need to step away. And I mean, you can't take care of everybody else until you take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. So, you know, we're heading into the finale. Chances are he wasn't going to show up that much anyway on the show because, you know, some of the regulars they're getting mixed about, you know, that there's no guarantee that, like, Superman hasn't been on here much this season at all yet. So, you know, just in the first episode a little bit. So, you know, it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference for Carl Lumbly. He's probably going to work as much as he was going to anyway, but it gives the character a nice arc. Mm-hmm. So, but I was still pretty shocked at it at the time, thinking, oh, wow, they, you know, and of course, Martian Manhunter was out of the Justice League for like 20 years in the comic books almost.
Right.
That's hard to believe because he's become such a, you know, he's like, he is the heart of the Justice League in a lot of ways, but he wasn't there when most of us were kids reading.
not when I first started reading the Justice League. Yep.
No, me neither. Yeah. So now, what do you want to say about the funeral, Cindy?
There is no freaking way that would have happened.
What?
There is no freaking way that they would let that ship go and be destroyed.
Mm.
It has too much historical significance. There is too much stuff in that wood, in that person. It's a perfectly preserved example. There's no freaking way that they would have let that be destroyed.
Who's going to argue with the Justice League about it, though?
Trust me. Crazy historians would do it.
That belongs in a museum.
but I'm serious. And the biggest thing about the whole funeral is he really dead?
We got to get to that here in a minute. Well,
yeah, that was my question too, because I didn't think about it from the scientific angle, to be honest with you, but I thought it was cool they gave him, you know, a Viking funeral is usually fire, you know, like they even in the Wonder Woman movies, right? I thought it was cool that the modern version was to send the ship into the sun. Okay, I like that. But I was like, okay, the whole thing was he was invulnerable and immortal, like and so I was like, why is he dead?
Right.
They all are acting like he's clearly dead. Every single character in the show, but it didn't jive with this whole immortal thing. So that's the part I didn't get.
Well, and the whole thing is,
you're killing him by sending him into the sun. So I'm like, I don't get it.
And then he doesn't get his hero's death, and he still doesn't get his person.
Right. In the comic story, he does.
Right. But I'm saying in this iteration,
yeah, he does.
I'm like, what on earth? You're taking away, you know, what he wanted.
Well, the way I'm with you. Now, they did say here invulnerability instead of immortality. But
that's interesting.
It's kind of the same thing in a way, because it's basically they did say he couldn't be killed by earth, fire, water, you know, whatever.
The four basic
elements. So I know in the he dies by plastic explosive in the R.
Right. Which hadn't existed at the time he had the curse put on him. So that was an elegant solution. Right. And then he got to fly away with his Valkyrie love.
Right.
Great solution.
Right.
You would think they would have let him have a happy ending here too, you know.
I kind of get though. I feel like he is dead.
Yeah.
I feel like he's probably dead, but why is he dead? And they should have explained, well, what killed him? Because then we could know this is just his body, and his soul went to Valhalla, and he's with the Valkyrie. And that would have been fine.
If they had just mentioned it, it would probably have been all right. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, if there was some kind of, like, you know, legend or somebody had left something in there, this is Prince John, the Viking prince, he died this way, and they're like, oh, that's how. Now, I don't know how the way could have been if he died, you know, it was like, I don't know. He was, you know, he teamed up with the Green Lantern of of the 10th century Earth and they were fighting an alien or something and he died by a laser blast. Yeah, I don't know, something like that, something goofy. You know, or
Zany Haney,
something.
Well, because the whole point of the villains going after him was to get this immortality science, right?
And then they
just treat him not just the Justice League, everybody's treating him like he's dead. So it's like, I didn't get it. But
I just imagine, because we watched the show Ghosts, I imagine somebody sounds a lot like Thor from Ghosts. I don't know if you ever watched Ghosts, but
love that show. Yes.
Imagine him being on that ship and go, Thor smells something burning. What is that? Oh,
it's me.
You know, it's me. Yeah, he's just asleep. He's not, you know, he's not, he's only mostly dead. You know, I don't know, but I love this episode, but that part, like, and now that Cindy's brought up the other part about the historical value of the ship.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. I'm good at just trying to brainstorm this stuff, but maybe it's because he, you know, all that stuff about the legend was a legend, right? They do make a big deal about saying his legend is legend is legend. Maybe he was, you know, that wasn't necessarily true. And he was just a regular guy who eventually died and got this burial. And his legend, all these stories grew around later, in which case the villains were chasing after a legend and they never would have gotten the formula anyway.
Yeah. That's true. I kind of look at it as, like I said, he died somehow, but it doesn't make any sense of how he died because there was no way for him to die back then.
Right.
Unless he was brought. Now, if they'd had him come out of the ice, fight with the Justice League and die by, like I said, some kind of laser blast or then that would have made sense. And then they could have laid him to rest, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I hate to pick it apart, but that, you know, because I really like this episode, but if you think about that too hard, it doesn't really work. Unless listeners, if you think of it other than a different way than the three of us are thinking of it, let us know what you think about it. Does it work for you? Did it work for you before we ruined it by thinking about it too much? Because we do that on podcasts, you know.
We do.
Well, and especially when you have logic glass, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, your Legion flight ring is, you know, of logic glass is nearby, yeah. So we get this dual montage, which is nice. We get the funeral where the Javelin ship is flying, you know, I guess it's basically towing, you know, tractor beaming it out into space, I guess.
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman reads the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, a stanza from it by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, which is a nice touch. And the words actually really fit his story and John's story really well. Mm. So kudos to you, Dwayne McDuffie. That's just awesome. I like the fact that Flash is the one who hugs John on the teleporter pad. You know, that makes perfect sense for Flash. To be the one that doesn't. He just like pats him on the shoulder. It's cute. But Superman and Batman couldn't bother to show up.
I say they came earlier and left.
Yeah. Yeah. Batman's not good at goodbyes, you know. So, I mean, Superman had him over to his house for Christmas. He should have showed up, right? You know, I mean, come on. You know, Mom, Pa, Kent should have showed up. We do see Diana, Green Lantern, Shiera, Vigilante, Shining Knight, Adam, Red Tornado, and Stargirl there. Yeah. So Shining Knight and Viking Prince would have made a cool combo. You know,
I always think, because in the Brave and the Bold, right, it wasn't the Shining Knight, it was the Silent Knight who was the Irv Novik storyline. So in my version, I'm thinking that the Shining Knight is subbing for the Silent Knight as Brave and the Bold partner. That's
I like it. I like it. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Diana and Green Arrow join Black Canary, Mr. Terrific, Red Tornado, and Shining Knight again, and the Javelin sending Prince John's ship into the sun, which I like that because, you know, like you said, Sir Justin would probably approve of the burial method, you know, so it makes sense. Yeah. We very briefly see the Viking Prince's body. We do see his body and he looks preserved. Just because he was in ice, is he like Captain America? Of course, he didn't have super soldier serum.
But Captain America was alive.
Captain America was alive. That's right. Yeah. But here he looks like a standard Bruce Timm design. He doesn't look Kubert-esque, which I thought was kind of interesting too, that they didn't just make him look like a Kubert. I mean, it's just a still image. Why not make him look like Joe Kubert?
No, artwork with the cheekbones. That didn't occur to me. That's interesting. Yeah.
Feathered cheekbones, you know, and things like that. So, but yeah, other than that, I mean, I think that's the big thing is the, why is he dead? Is he dead? Is he mostly dead? Is he, you know, like Cindy said, why not, you know, put him in a, you know, put him in a photon torpedo and send him into the sun, you know, not, don't burn that ship up, you know?
You have to think, I work in academia, so.
Yeah, you're a history major.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's, yeah.
It just made my heart hurt that they just burned it up.
Oh, man. Do you guys want to jump into our superlatives?
Sure.
Power action feature.
I'll say for power action feature, the big kapow or your favorite action moment or any kind of moment, what was your favorite beat there, Paul?
Well, I had a couple, but I think, and I hope this counts, but I think it's John getting Killer Frost to stop the avalanche. I like you even use the word, he's using his power of wisdom to use her. So I that was my, you know, there's plenty of great other times where Wonder Woman's battling various things, but I like that moment. That would be my vote. How about
that's
you?
That's a really good one.
The speech.
That's an easy one.
I had to pick the spin because if I didn't, I might end up divorced.
So. Oh, you'd be sleeping on the couch, baby.
But when we first watched this one in 2005, she jumped off the couch and was like, yes!
That's cute.
So I had to pick that just because it meant so much to her, you know? So, yeah.
Rotating chairperson.
So who'd you have for rotating chairperson, Paul?
I think it's got to be Wonder Woman, right? She had the best action. She also had the inspiration for John to do this. She's being the diplomat stuff. So, I mean, she's, you know, it's really her story primarily, other than the backstory of the Viking Prince. That's my vote.
Yeah,
definitely. And with Diana and where she, you know, she's trying something else. She's trying diplomatic skills to work things out with her mother. She's with John, giving him support. She's ushering the Viking Prince into the afterlife, you know, all of that.
Yep. This is a really good, awesome. Really good showing for her. And it makes sense with where her character's been going on the series too. Yeah. Yeah. She was my vote too.
Justice League communicator.
So Justice League communicator, no shortage of great dialogue and lines in this one. So what's yours, Paul?
My mother is less likely to withdraw than she is to attempt a military solution.
Yep. When Amazon's
that was an
attacked.
Easy one. That was an easy one for me. Yeah. And then the blank stares of everybody around her. She's like, as a last resort.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, heard a pin drop in that room. Yeah. That's great. I love it.
Yes. And it was clever PR for our host to hold the talks here. But it is not proof.
You have to take this seriously. Atlantis has already withdrawn from the World Assembly over this, and they aren't the only country considering action.
Are you suggesting Themyscira might do the same?
If your pollution continues to affect my home, my mother is less likely to withdraw than she is to attempt a military solution. As a last resort only, of course. Excuse me.
That's great. What about you, Cindy?
Green Arrow! When he sings along, you know.
Yeah, I had to pick that one too because I had to get it in here somewhere because I've just loved that ever since it happened. I always remember this episode from Wonder Woman's spin and him. I know, and like you said, Paul, maybe that's not as Green Arrow-y as it should be, but it's just so damn fun. I can't.
It is funny. No question.
Well, this Green Arrow iteration is my Green Arrow.
So. Yeah, I like the little bit, the little less sanctimonious version of Ollie we got here. Yeah, I like it. I like it. So.
Comic connections.
For comic connections, I think we all agree it's the Viking Prince.
Oh, yeah, the montage is the Kubert stuff. That's an easy one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Bruce Timm has got to show, and everybody involved, James Tucker and all those guys, show how much they love Jack Kirby over the course of this series a lot. But they got to send a love letter to Robert Kaniger and Joe Kubert too. So that's great, you know. And
by the way, Robert Kaniger wrote a lot of Wonder Woman too.
He sure did. Yeah, he did. He did. Marsden died, he was primary writer for what, decades, like up from the 40s through the 60s. So yeah,
Denny O'Neill, right?
20 something years. Yeah,
Denny O'Neill. Yeah, till the exactly. So yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, so a lot of Robert Kaniger in this episode, and that's really cool. Yeah, and of course Joe Kubert.
Electricity is evil.
For electricity is evil, I don't think we have any electricity really in this one, do we?
Well, I mean, that's nuclear subs. That was the that would not be evil.
I thought, maybe I misunderstood this category. I thought when Devil Ray squeezed Diana's shoulder, that was, I thought, you know, really, it's not electricity, but it really.
It is evil.
Evil, yeah.
Evil. Yeah. We'll give it to him. Yeah.
That was my best guess at that one.
I like that. That's good. It's not electricity. It's not Superman getting shocked by a manhole
cover. Just a villain really being a villain.
Just being a
being a villain. Yeah, that's what I chose. I
mean, literally like pouring, you know, lemon juice into a paper cut type thing.
Right.
Just with even worse, 10,000 times worse. So yeah. So what did we think of this one overall? What did you think, Paul?
I loved it. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I watched it two or three times before, you know, to prepare and took my notes and everything. But I was like, man, I got to go back. It's been 20 years since I watched this stuff. Right. So I got to go back and watch these. So I'm doing a Deep Space Nine rewatch. I'm like in season two or three now because of the podcast I did with Siskoid back at Halloween. So now I'm like now next on the list is, I don't just don't know whether I just start with Justice League or go all the way back. And I don't know. Maybe I'll go to Superman because I've watched Batman more than once, but Superman, I might not have watched more than once many of the episodes. So go from there to Justice League.
Yeah, Superman's got like more direct connective tissue to Justice League. So, you know, I think that probably
Dark Side and everything. Yeah, with Dark Side and everything. Yeah.
It's not as long either, not as many episodes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, Deep Space Nine, one of these days we've got to sit down and watch Deep Space Nine from start to finish. Because when it was on, we were in college and we caught it sporadically, real choppy. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I know so many people, that's their favorite Star Trek series. And it's probably other than Enterprise, and I've never really watched Discovery, but other than Enterprise, it's the one I've lost. At least I've seen more Voyager than I have Deep Space. Not just because Voyager was like, for whatever reason, I guess because it was
available.
It was more available. It was more available because I guess it was a UPN show.
It was on a network show, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess that's why. Yeah. So we need to get back. What do you think of this one overall?
I mean, it was, like I said, aside from the problems that I have with the ship and whether, you know, the prince was actually dead, you know, it was a great episode.
Yeah. That's true. Me too. I think it's probably one of the most poetic episodes. Not, and of course, it's got a poem at the end, but it's really got this kind of, this literate kind of feel about it. You know, the Viking prince having, you know, his life being a lesson for Jean. It's a really innovative idea, especially considering it was pretty much a last minute idea. So it just shows you Dwayne McDuffie was such a fantastic writer.
Definitely.
It's just such a shame he was taken so early. You know, he was very talented. I liked so much of what he did in comic book writing too. And movies he did. I mean, he's just incredible.
Yeah, I feel like if Dwayne McDuffie had lived, I think he'd be, I mean, he was already revered, you know, to a point, but revered, but I think he'd be more so now. I think he'd be like seen as like one of the
he could have had a bigger influence than Geoff Johns, for example, and that might have been a better endpoint for us all.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if they, you know, I've always said
I like Geoff Johns, but not, you know, but some of the things I don't like. But Dwayne McDuffie had very little that he did that I didn't like.
Right. And I mean, you know, I've always said just give the DC universe to these guys. You know, just give it to the animated guys. I mean, they've done Bruce Timm's done a few things on his own that I haven't liked as well. But for the most part, you know, James Tucker and they got JMD Mateus involved and guys like that. And I think we've been in good hands. So yeah, but Well, thanks so much, Paul, for stopping by the Watchtower to help us cover this one and bringing your Viking Prince knowledge, which honestly
Such as it is.
I didn't even know you had it, to be honest with you. I remember I asked, like, hey, does anybody want to be out there? You're like, hey, I'll do the Viking Prince one. I'm like, cool, that's great.
I should have told you why.
Oh, no, that's great. That's fantastic. I love it. Now I'm going to have to look for that book because I really want it now.
It's a lot of fun.
This is not helpful, Paul.
Yeah, sorry. I know. I keep spending your money, Cindy. Sorry.
Well,
but I bet you can find
audience.
It at a show.
Yeah,
I think you find it at a show, Chris.
Well, I can't say anything. This is what I picked up for him today when Danny and I were out.
Yeah, a Legend of the Lone Ranger pop-up book from the 1981 movie. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I didn't know that existed, but I've got a Lone Ranger collection going, so yeah. I had to have it. So yeah. But I'm a sucker for.
Well, actually, Danny found it, but I paid. So
right,
you know.
Right. I'm a sucker for Joe Kubert and Robert Hanniger.
It's the art is really good. I mean, he's in his prime, right? In the late 50s, it's really, really good. And it's and the stories are fun. It's jarring when they change the continuity, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's on Earth B now. You know, it was on Earth One, now it's Earth B.
Oh, yeah.
So where can folks find you on the network and anywhere else?
Well, I am a co-host every month with my Bat cousin, Sean M. Myers, the Batfan Family Reunion. We have a great time going through it. Chris is a guest coming up very shortly. I don't know which of these two will drop first. Chris.
Probably this one, I think.
But we are nearing the final stretch of the Batman Family in Detective Comics. We've got 6 or 7 issues left to go, and we are in about to enter territory with Black Lightning stories and stuff like that, but it's a little less cohesive. We've left the Bob Brazakis era, but we're having a lot of fun enjoying the guests. We have a few first-time guests coming up too, which will be fun. So we're looking forward to ending strong over the course of 2024.
Nice. And if anybody, I can't imagine anybody listening to this is not, but if you're not listening, Batman Family Reunion, it is probably the most fun show on the Fire and Water Podcast.
No, you're very kind. Very kind.
You guys have a lot of
fun
over
there.
Yeah.
We do have fun.
Bouncing around between the different features, and you guys got some great, the great little features you do with the newsstand and the ads and everything. It's a lot of fun to be on, and it's a lot of fun to listen to. So
thank you.
I can't recommend it enough.
Thank you.
You guys are doing great stuff over there, and you've got quite a spread of food that we talk about. Makes me hungry every time.
And always Twinkies are there all the time. So
yeah, even though Martin Gray doesn't like them,
he does not like them. There's always Twinkies there.
Yeah.
But thank you for having me, Chris and Cindy. This was super fun. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for I was a little nervous. I haven't done a podcast with a show, but thanks for making me feel comfortable, and I really appreciate it. I had a great time.
Well, thank you, Paul. That we really enjoyed having you as well.
Mm-hmm. Special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/FWPodcast.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club Podcast, David Capoon, Rocket Dan Johnson, and Chuck Carvalho, who specifically support JLUcast. Would any of you guys like to volunteer to run the Watchtower in Jean's absence? Be sure to let us know, although I think Mr. Terrific may take the position. But just in case he decides not to, let us know. Be here next time for the grand opening of the Flash Museum. I'm sure no rogues will show up to try and spoil the celebration. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
JLUcast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FWPodcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
Scandinavia, early in the 10th century, lived Prince John, the greatest warrior of his era. His tremendous skill and valor brought him fame throughout the world as the legendary Viking Prince. His adventures were epic, as were the legends that grew around his exploits. This much we know to be truth. On a frozen battlefield, Prince John, sole survivor of a bloody war, its purpose lost to time, met a Valkyrie, a messenger from the Norse gods, sent to escort the souls of fallen heroes to their reward in the halls of Valhalla. Impossibly, they fell in love and swore their hearts to each other. But Odin, king of the Norse gods, discovered their illicit affair and, enraged, banished John from Valhalla. The Viking prince pleaded with Odin for mercy, begging to be allowed to remain with his love. Odin agreed, saying that if John died a heroic death, he and his love would again be united for all eternity. But Odin was a crafty god and cruel. Before exiling John, he gifted him with invulnerability to harm from metal, wood, fire, and water. The Viking prince soon realized that he would never die a hero's death, because no weapon on earth could slay him. He trod boldly across a troubled world in search of adventure and an honorable death, growing ever more distant from humanity. Eventually, weary of the endless fight for justice and despairing in his loneliness, he sailed north, beyond the boundaries of the known world, and passed from the knowledge of men.